Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for needle people. And this week, right there, that's her, right there.
I'm already laughing at you.
Stephanie Webb of Lindy Stitches. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Oh, I'm just super. We got extra sound effects from Stephanie, so we're good to go. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Oh, good.
Yep. So, all right, now let me see if I'm right. This is okay. A test to see if I'm right. Born and raised in the Midwest.
That's right.
Yeah. You know how?
How do you know?
Well, because I was listening to your videos, some of your videos, because contrary to the popular belief, I do research ahead of these things.
Who's spreading that lie about you, Gary?
Oh, it's been mentioned. Tarnation. You said tarnation.
I said tarnation.
Yes. Huh. Yes, and I have not used or heard that word in a long time. And used to use it, you know, you'd run across it quite often, because I'm born in Michigan, so.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, that's one of those words.
You think that's a Midwest word?
I think it is. Now, of course, 15 people say, oh, no, right. We use it all the time, and we live in New Mexico.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I think it is Midwest, but maybe wrong. So, yeah, so tarnation. Yeah, and then I was trying to think, okay, that's one of those words that you use so you don't say a bad word. But then I couldn't associate it with what the bad word is. And then I was trying to come up with other words, and I came up dry, so I just gave up on the whole thing. Yeah. Because there are those words, you know, that right. I think a lot of them are Midwestern, yeah.
Yeah. That we use as replacements to speak a little more better.
yeah, a little more better. Let me write that one down. That's a great phrase. Yep. So we got to meet in Nashville. That was a blast.
That was fun. Yeah.
That was your first, right?
Was amazing. That was my, well, I visited last year. That was my first time exhibiting.
Okay.
And it was a whirlwind of exciting amazement. It was so much fun. Yeah.
So let's go all the way back to that. So you visited last year, and was it visiting to decide whether you wanted to go, or you knew you were going to go this year and you were just getting the lay of the land, or what were you doing?
It was mostly visiting to decide if I wanted to exhibit. I'd actually been offered a room at last year's show, but knew I didn't have enough time to swing it. So I decided to visit and just make a plan. And yeah, after I left the show last year, I pretty much knew I was going to sign up to have a room. And it felt a lot better about, you know, what I was doing and what I could expect. So, yeah.
I'm just curious, because this was my second one also. Attending. And so the first time last year, it was really just I did some things, but it was getting the lay of the land, just understanding what was going on and how it was all functioning. And then this year was a whole different beast for me too. So do you go home then and say, all right, I'm going next year, I'm going in 2019. And then, all right, now what am I going to have? And you start designing, or, because I got to believe you can't really wait too much after one show to get started to be ready for the next one.
You know, I think it depends on what designer you talk to. I'm always amazed that there are designers that start thinking about market in November or December. And it just depends on how you work. I could never fly by the seat of my pants for Nashville. So yeah, last year after I came home, I started designing for it. And as the year went on, if I designed something that I thought, you know, that really would go over well at Nashville, I just saved it for the show.
So, okay. So there was a selection that this one gets, we're holding this one back till Nashville.
Right. Yep.
Okay. And then other designs you release. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other part, the part that just about Nashville that I enjoy almost as much as the designs is how people present them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of creativity in the presentation and the setting up of the room. And that amazes me. Of course, you're dealing with a hotel full of creative people, so you would expect to see that. But I just think it's really terrific the way everybody has their own take on how to present and show, especially small pieces. It's so much fun to see what people do with those. And so,
oh, yeah.
You know, that had to be also part of the planning. Did you map out a room size and start to piece it together?
Absolutely, because, yeah. Well, one of my business mentors that I would, you know, run questions by, she said, okay, you have these smalls. They're great. They're ready to go. How are you going to display these? And I said, well, I'm just going to put them in a bowl. And she said, no, you're just going to put them in a bowl. Like, you need to, you know, we got to get past the just throw it in a bowl thing. So, yeah, I had to up my game a little bit and think about where things were going to be. I have a friend who does, like, barn sales, so she does a lot of antiquing and collecting, and then people come and buy things from her. And I end up borrowing just some pieces to, you know, make some height and interest on top of the tables so that everything wasn't at the same level. So that was really handy. But yeah, I had to get the tables out and get everything set up to see just how it was going to look. I didn't want to just throw random stuff in my van and hope that a nice display would come out of it. Yeah.
So when you get the room, because for those who don't know, it's at an Embassy Suites. And so all the designers, they have a room, which is a suite. And yeah. And so the living room area is basically becomes the store, and then you have a bathroom, and then you have in the back a bedroom, and some designers take up the bedroom too.
That's right.
With their designs, they have so much to show. But so you walk into that room, do they clean it out at all, or is all the furniture there? Oh, okay. Okay.
You have to manhandle all of that furniture into the back bedroom.
Ah.
Yeah. Or okay. Cover it up or utilize it in some way. Yeah, that's kind of one of the challenges, because they do give you, there's a lot of furniture in the room, but
yes.
You got to make room for those tables and for people to just be, because your room can get pretty full too.
Yeah. That's what I wondered about, because, and you see people, like I saw more than one person using dresser drawers as filing cabinets. to hold their, you know, to hold their chart.
I didn't think about that. That's a good idea.
There you go. Yeah, write that down quick.
There's also a challenge with the artwork. There's a giant, it's the same in each room. It's this giant painting, and it's bright orange.
Oh, yay.
Which doesn't fit with a lot of people's aesthetics. So, yeah, figure out how to cover up the ugly painting. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, it's just interesting, because everybody just transforms that hotel, and it just becomes a different world. Those first five floors just become a different world, and it's fun to see. And like the people who do reproduction samplers, most of them, they just are setting them up, frame pieces propped up on easels, because not a whole lot more you can do about it. But
right.
But you guys that have small stuff and medium-sized stuff, you can really get creative and really show off those things. And, basically say, hey, this is how it might be used in a home as a finished piece. And,
mm-hmm.
and so, yeah, it just seemed like a lot of fun to me. If I'm not creative, but, for someone who is creative. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it is so fun. I love going into everybody's room. It feels like there's not enough time in the weekend to really absorb everything that's going on and appreciate each room as an individual piece of the show. But yeah, it's really fun.
And so the drive home, your head's just spinning with ideas.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah. We're a week and a half home now, and I'm still struggling to process. Yeah, I had so much advice thrown at me from store owners and different exhibitors and fabric dyers and floss dyers. So I was just putting little scraps of paper and shoving them in my notebook, and I still haven't gone through all of them. and decided which pieces of advice to keep and which to
yeah.
file away for later.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, you feel explosively creative when you're exposed to everyone else's great ideas. I mean, did you feel that way, Gary, going home?
Yeah, well, I had different ideas. You know,
yeah.
You know, for me, it's a different perspective. So,
right.
You know, for me, it was who can I get to do shows, and what ideas did I see that, you know, and what I saw, what is that saying to me about the hobby and where it's headed and what's going on? And,
yeah.
So those were the kinds of things that went through my head. And for me, it was pretty exciting because last year, my first year, you know, I heard all the stories about people lining up to get into rooms and, just all kinds of things. And I didn't experience that. It seemed like a pretty quiet show.
Yeah.
Last year, to me anyway. Maybe I had my expectations build up so much that you know, anything was going to be a letdown, but it just didn't seem like a real vibrant show.
Yeah.
And this year, I felt like it was easily a level, if not two levels, better.
Really?
Yes.
Just more people?
More people, but also I felt like, and again, you know, 2 years in a row, so it's a sample of two, but I really felt like there were the designers were better, more of them. I just felt like it needed two more days to get through everything.
Yeah.
because there was so much good stuff. And then the other thing that I felt this year, and again I might be wrong, is I felt like there were more younger designers.
Hmm.
And I'm probably dead wrong on that, but I felt a whole different vibe and a whole different enthusiasm this year than last year. And
that's great to hear.
Yeah, but see, I've had this belief for some time, and conversations with people in Nashville, that I truly believe that particularly that the cross stitch hobby in particular.
Right.
Now there's an editor for you. Particularly the cross stitch hobby in particular. See, this, I do that for a living. Yeah.
Tell me specifically. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Just brilliant. Anyway, I think that the cross stitch hobby is back to the level it was in the 80s.
You think so?
Yeah, but just in a different form.
What do you mean a different form?
In that there aren't brick and mortar stores on every corner.
Yeah.
It's just a different form because of FlossTube and online and so on and so forth. But I just really believe in talking to people. People are busy. People are selling a lot of charts. They're creating a lot of charts. And I think that the internet has done that. I think that the cloth that we have, the linen and Aida and the dyed cloths, yeah, have opened up worlds. And then without a doubt, the thread lines that we have, the options that we have just energized designers to the,
yeah,
point where they're doing things that they've never done or never could do, or are just simply seeing designs in a different light and getting inspired. But no, I really do. And it's a weird thing because here we are through 2019, and you would think a hobby as old as cross stitch would be, you know, on life support, barely hanging on. And I think it's thriving, and I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so therapeutic, and I think it's amazing how, you know, FlossTube and Instagram and the different social medias have really, they reinvigorate people. I think when you craft and you're by yourself and you have this passion and you're alone, everyone talks about when they found FlossTube, they loved cross stitch all the more, right? And
yeah,
they you know, might have gone into a little debt because of it. But you know, we invigorate each other and we're excited about what the other person is doing, and I think that is really fun.
Yeah, and it, all of those things also allow people like you to get yourself into the business, to share your designs, get them noticed and distributed.
Yeah.
Easier, the bar, the barrier to entry is lower.
Right.
Or easier to get over, or whatever, however you want to describe it. But so you can have some designs and give them a try. Like you set up an Etsy shop. You can send, there's just ways to let people know. Just simply do a floss tube and say, hey, look at my new designs. And, right. That didn't exist back in the 80s.
Right.
And,
right. You would have had to publish it yourself, which right. costs money. And, that's a big barrier to entry.
Oh yeah. A couple local stores picked you up. And, of course there were a couple of magazines, but to get into those had to be right next to impossible. There were so many people. And, I just think it's fantastic. And it's opening doors to bring in young people, into stitching and all these small things. I mean, it's not particularly expensive to get involved in cross stitch in particular. You can right. just kind of dive in for not a lot. And if you're a mother and you're constantly waiting to pick up kids or, whatever practice, you can have a little something to do without a major investment. And, I think it's an exciting time. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, all right, I got to know now, how do you get started?
How did I get started?
Yeah.
You want to go back to, like, history of craftiness in my family?
I want
to
know.
How did I get started with cross stitch?
I want to know, yeah.
Okay, my grandma and my mom were both excellent seamstresses.
Okay.
So, my mom sewed a lot of my clothes, and it was in an era where that wasn't so common anymore. She sewed both of my prom dresses. Had that not been such a stressful experience for her, she probably would have sewed my wedding dress. But, she'd be up at midnight, cursing at the sewing machine. I thought, maybe I shouldn't do this to her anymore. She cross-stitched in the era where, in the 80s, when cross-stitch was really hot. Made me a lot of different things. So she inspired me to be a crafty woman too.
Okay. So she did it. Then did you say, hey, mom, show me how, or did she how did that, I'm always intrigued by that dynamic. How does that transition get made?
She showed me how to use the sewing machine. And I made a few projects, but garment sewing is not my gift. So okay. that didn't really stick. My grandma taught me how to quilt, and so I became a quilter in high school. And then I taught myself how to crochet, and just my love of crafting has carried me through. I have not been a cross stitcher for that long. I wish I could say that I have this long history of cross stitch, but I really don't. I started seriously cross stitching maybe 2014.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it hasn't been very long.
Well, that's all right. That's all right.
Yeah.
No, that's everybody starts whenever they start, but you have the background. You have the needle and thread background of some kind. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you still quilt?
I don't, and that is my children's fault. They took up all the bedrooms in my house. And so
the nerve of them.
I know. It's so rude. I gave up my quilting literally just so my son could have a bedroom. quilting is one of those crafts. You have to keep everything out. You can't really drag it back and forth from a closet. So I decided when they leave, maybe I can make another quilt.
Yeah, that's a space consumer, that quilting thing.
It definitely is. Yeah. I had to have the design wall to, like, look at what I was doing and everything. So, yeah, that's a lot of space.
So how do you do your designing? I mean, the kids took all the rooms.
So I have a desk in our bedroom.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I set up my little workstation and, get to work there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Kids can't
take significantly less space.
Yeah. Than kids thing. Can't get to that. Okay.
No, that's a no kid zone. Stay out.
Where does the designing happen then? Did you just, I mean, do you have an art background?
I don't have an art background. I mean, I took honors art in high school, and that's as far as my formal art education went. It's a kind of a long story, but when I was pregnant with my second daughter, which would have been like 2006-ish, a local entrepreneur hired me to write his newsletter and do different things on his online business. And he was kind of one of these guys who would just throw pop projects at you and say, I don't really, you know, figure it out, do it. And so I'd go, okay.
Yeah.
So he started throwing magazine ads at me. Like, I want a magazine ad, and then this is how big it has to be. What he did, which made it kind of a little harder, was he sells saddles online for horses, which I've never owned a horse. I have very limited horse knowledge. So I'd have to figure out, you know, I basically was doing graphic design without any sort of graphic design background. But it taught, I learned a ton about different computer programs. I learned how to write in HTML, which I don't think people even write in that computer language anymore.
No,
but
no.
it just taught me to be a go-getter. And if you don't know how to figure it out, figure it out. But with the graphics and art side, I loved doing it. It kind of sparked this thing in me that I didn't know was there.
Okay.
You know, where you get in that workflow where time falls away and you're not eating or drinking or thinking about anything. You're just so obsessed with the project.
Right.
That's what graphic design did to me. So I've always been visually interested in designing. And so that job ended when we adopted our son. My plate was too full to keep up with it. But a few years later, I was twiddling my thumbs, wanting to, you know, have another side gig, and fell into cross stitch designing.
So the beast was in you. You just had to.
The beast was in me. Yeah. And it's more fun than designing horse saddle ads.
Yeah, I would put that on the more fun side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to really be into horses to enjoy horse saddle ads. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really into horses. Yeah. That's interesting. So, and of course, what's the statement you have on your website or wherever you have it? Raising three rambunctious children, homeschooling, taxi driving, and wiping up peanut butter. So it sounds like a normal mom.
That's the sum of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but okay. So this just gets you, this gives you a release. It gives you an escape.
Oh, it's so satisfying. Yeah. To be able to create something that not only I enjoy, but then other people enjoy too. And to see them stitching it it's very satisfying.
What was the first design?
The first is, oh boy. The first design said bust a move.
Oh, okay.
It was very simple. I, you know, was just learning the program, and that's what it said.
Yeah, I know you do a lot with words.
Yeah, I love words. I love good quotes. Yeah. I was an English major. I like poetry. And so, yeah, I have a collection of like just quotes that I've collected throughout the years that mean something to me.
Okay, well, that makes sense now, because there are several people who do words, and I wonder what it is that drives them to do that, because at some point, you know, how many word things can you do? But if you're, you know, but if you're an English major, then yeah, it's pretty endless.
Yes, the possibilities are endless.
Right.
You're not a word. You don't like words.
I don't like words. I live with words every day. I have no choice.
Okay.
No,
yes.
I love words.
I want to get away from the words.
Well, it's just interesting because, see, that's what I mean. I edit two magazines and have for forever.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what I do every day is words. And to me, it's the most fun. There's some people who are writers and people who are editors, and I'm an editor because I love taking the written word and reworking it and making it make sense and cleaning it up and all of those things. To me, that's the fun. That's the puzzle to put together. And so I love it, you know, but, it's just interesting that some people are really good with those word type designs, and other people you go, I'm not so sure there. and then it's interesting to see, like, I don't know if you'll end up evolving away from that. 'Cause like your designs at Nashville, I mean, the bunny lace trio, I mean, there's not a word on that. Those are pretty neat.
You know? Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. It's just whatever strikes your fancy. Sometimes I start with a quote and sometimes I start with the image. It just depends on where the creative process takes me.
Is it hard? It seems to me it would be hard to design words to have the lettering look right.
Well, I think it's hard in cross stitch because, well, it's pixels.
Right.
And a lot of letters are rounded. And so to make them look smooth can be a challenge. Yeah. I think that's why sometimes I just make it look old. Because old can look a little bit rough, you know, whereas if you're talking about the modern, you know, more modern fonts, those flow more than the older, straighter letters. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I'm seeing it in my mind. Fonts are sometimes hard. I think because I haven't ventured into over one or the higher counts, I struggle even more because I've usually done 32 count and I'm not doing over one. So yeah, it's a challenge. The font is a challenge for me.
Yeah. Well, and it's the proportion. You know, to me, it's the proportion of whatever font you choose, how big to make it on your piece.
Yeah.
You know, how bold to make it, how thick, all those things, all must go into that design in order to get the look you're after.
Yeah.
And yeah, you are limited to a degree. You're limited in terms of being able to make the curves curve.
Right.
And I don't understand why people don't use half crosses and quarter crosses more, other than I know that they're generally rejected because stitchers don't want to mess with them.
Yeah. But, you know, those calls are so hard to make. I think they're even harder to make when you're listening to FlossTube a lot, because people are always talking about their preferences and you want to please people. So I don't know. I've tried to stick with full crosses just because I do hear people complain about fractionals so much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a universal thing, but to me, it gives
it
you
would
a chance.
Look better sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes that blocky pixelated thing right out of it. You can get a nice, much smoother curve to it. And, I don't find them to be that difficult to do.
Yeah.
A little fiddly at times, but not a big deal. But,
yeah.
Yeah. And I think if I were to do a design where there was a curve, I think I would put them in whether they were designed there or not, just to add
smooth
that little extra. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think so. Yep. Yeah. So do you have ideas for next year's Nashville? How do you do your ideas? do they just kind of come to you? Do you have a moment and you say, all right, I'm sitting down this evening and I'm going to start.
I'm going to start. I feel like since I went to Nashville, I'm in a whole different ball game. Whereas before no one was holding me accountable. I didn't have a distributor. I just have this Etsy shop. I can do whatever I want to do. If I don't design something for 6 months, who cares? But now that I have a distributor and I do want to do Nashville next year, I do have kind of a content calendar of when I want to release my next batch of designs. So I'm just trying to fill in that calendar. As for Nashville next year, I haven't even thought about it.
Yeah. Now see that's interesting because that adds a different dynamic.
Yeah.
To the design thing. 'Cause you got to resist the pressure to come up with designs.
Yeah.
And feel an obligation, like you said, because there's a show coming up or now I have a distributor, so I need to feed the meter.
Yeah.
And yet not lose your creativity, not lose that spontaneity.
Yeah. Yeah. Creativity is a weird beast because sometimes I find that like, if I have parameters, it sometimes helps me to be more creative. Like, okay, you have to sit down and you have to design something patriotic, right? That's your parameter. Patriotic, go. Sometimes that helps me.
Oh.
Whereas if you're just, okay, I need to design something today, and you sit down and you look at all your trillion hand-dyed flosses and, you know, it's just trying to pick something out of the sky, that can actually be kind of more difficult. But I know what you're saying. Like, you don't want to just create to be putting stuff out.
Right.
You want to put good stuff out instead of just, you know, quality over quantity.
Yeah, you don't want to get in a position like a musician where I have a record contract and I have to deliver an album this year. And, you know, all right, I'll throw these things together so they'll get off my back. You can't be in that position, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just an interesting experience. And I find that's interesting to me, too, that, you know, if you have some parameters.
Yeah.
Then that, at least that must be, it just gives you a starting spot. See, because some designers that we've talked to, it seems like they just have stuff falling out of their heads all day long. And, you know, and then they simply can't get them down fast enough.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, I have a lot of ideas and not necessarily enough time to bring all of those into fruition, but yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a process and a job and a weird creative venture all at the same time.
Best time of day to create?
Morning.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm a morning person. My brain cells don't really fire very hard after about 8 p.m.
Okay. Now, if I have to write, that it gets done in the morning or it doesn't get done because anything afternoon is just garbage. Yeah.
You got to get the most important things out of the way first.
Yeah, and I don't know what that is. It's like my I think it's as the day goes on, your head gets filled with more things, and so you just can't.
Yeah. You get that decision fatigue,
yeah.
Where you're like, if I have to make one more decision, I'm going to go crazy.
Yeah. So you have what, 3 kids?
I have 3 kids, 2 girls and a boy, 14, 12, and 8.
Holy smokes. More power to you. Wow.
Oh, they keep me very busy. Yeah.
Yeah. You're getting the run. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, I am. The teenage girls and the very rambunctious boy.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
A well-rounded parenting experience.
Yeah. Well, from experience, it'll be over faster than you can believe it. So
yes, yeah. I'm trying to remember that.
You savor it no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Miss my kids being around, I have to say. Yep.
Yeah.
It happens.
I have a sneaking suspicion that I will be bored once they leave. Even though I think it's going to be awesome, I think I might get a little bored.
No, you won't.
No?
You won't. No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
No. Empty nesting, there's a lot to be said for it.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me. Yeah. You won't be bored.
That sounds great.
And it's peaceful.
Yeah. That is what I long for, peaceful.
Yeah. No. And when you put something down, it stays there. Yeah.
That sounds like a miracle.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very nice. It's truly very nice.
You don't wander around the house going, who took the scissors? And right. No one took the scissors.
Right, yeah.
But they're under some kid's bed that you'll find 3 months later.
Right, yeah. No, you that all goes away. It's very nice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so look forward to that.
Good. Very good.
Yep. So what new areas... We got new areas to try for designs, or are you still milking what you have in your head along the same lines you're doing now?
I think a little bit of both. I want to try different finishes, and I haven't branched out very far with the finishing. I've never made a drum, and so I think this year I'm going to try to finish a drum. Maybe not even design one, just finish somebody else's so I can get a feel for how that goes. I feel kind of torn about this, but I might start upping some fabric counts. Like I said, I've stuck to 32 because I feel like that's the most accessible fabric count. But when I was in Nashville, it was like, oh, you know, everything is 36 or 40. At least that's the way I felt. I did not see very many pieces stitched on higher counts. And so I don't know what that's all about. That's just kind of, maybe that's just what all the other designers prefer. But I thought, you know, maybe I need to try it out.
You mean you didn't see them stitched on higher counts, meaning?
Lower counts, I mean.
Oh, okay.
That was a mistake.
I don't know how that works. Because, see, if I'm doing linen, I just go right to 40 count.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. I think part of it is then I can stitch with one strand.
Yeah.
But I also like the way it looks.
Yeah.
And I use a magnifier, so I really don't care.
Yeah.
I just go right to 40. And really, I just simply have no interest in any lower count. And then when I do needlepoint, it's 18 or nothing. And I've only fiddled a little bit with Congress cloth, which is, I think, 24 or something like that. But I like those higher count threads. I just think they look nice. And I don't, with today's LEDs and magnifiers, I just don't see it to be an issue. That's the only way I stitch too. So if I were trying to stitch with just my eyes, then I'd be down at 32, something like that.
Well, what I found so interesting was I saw all the preview images for everything that people were releasing at Nashville. So I saw all these different projects and I assumed they were way bigger than what they actually were in person. So I'd go into someone's room and like La-Di-Da, for example, she released this rabbit and it's a little stand up and it has an alphabet on it. And I assumed that rabbit was like 10 inches tall. And I walked into her room and I just gasped because it was only about 4 inches tall, you know, and it was all because of the fabric count. Everything was smaller and it is petite and lovely looking. So I thought I would try some higher fabric counts and just see what happens. I'm not sure about, you know, I'm also not sure if that's a generational thing or a more experienced cross stitcher sort of thing. I know there's like a little bit of elitism around 40 count. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
You don't know about that?
No, I don't know. People say, like somebody posted today in one of the Facebook forums that they had just finished their first piece on linen, and it looked to be 32, 36, somewhere in there, and how hard it was. And, you know, they liked it, but it was really hard. And I just can't get my head wrapped around that whole thing, like moving from Aida to linen, and that's hard and a big leap, and then going to higher counts is hard and a big leap, because still just a grid. It's just a smaller grid.
Right.
And to me, if I only have to use one thread, one strand,
yeah,
that just simplified life considerably to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if we didn't have a good magnifier, yeah, I'd go down to lower ones, like I said. But to me, that's a non-issue. So I think it just gets easier, and then you're on that smaller count. I don't know. It's everybody has a different thing and a different thing that they enjoy. But I struggle with that, and we've had conversations through various shows about that whole concept of it's harder. And I just am not ever going to be able to understand how it's harder just because there's more threads per inch.
I don't know.
I don't
Maybe
know.
It is just an eyesight thing.
But, you know, and I understand that. I mean, that happens in anything as people's eyes get older.
Yeah.
You know, like there are a lot of needlepoint people who post that I need to use 13 count canvas because my eyes just won't let me do anything smaller. And I understand how that goes. But, I don't know. I don't think there's any one answer. I think it always comes back to what makes you comfortable and what do you enjoy? And I mean, you have to go with that. You have to go with that because it is supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be work.
Right.
But the small things intrigue me because there are an awful lot, because I could never understand watching floss tube things, how people could finish so many things. And then it started to dawn on me. Yeah. Because they're all 3x4 inch pieces. And so you can knock out a bunch of them. Cause I'm always doing something that's bigger than I have any business doing.
The smalls are fun.
Well, and that's just it. Like I have I have your bunny lace trio. Now that's probably the first, I don't know that I've ever done anything that small. So it's going to be a new experience for me.
You think you'll like it?
Well, I don't know. See, I just don't know.
Might be too small to be satisfying.
No, I mean it'll get finished faster.
That's true.
So, because I've probably on this one Hands Across the Sea sampler that I'm working on right now, I probably stitched these things, you know, the equivalent twice.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what that's like to start with something like that and then have it finished in a relatively short time.
Yeah.
And then, do I go, wait, give me more of that. That was really satisfying. Or is it, okay, that was nice. Now back to the bigger projects. Yeah. I don't know.
Could change your whole, like, rotation.
It's dangerous.
It's a dangerous game.
but it's just, I don't know. I don't know what the dynamic is there, but people sure seem to like to do the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And they're certainly easier to take with you. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
And
yep.
Or sit in the chair at night and do, because just about everything I do has to be on a stand. It's just too big to hold.
Right.
So, I don't know. Don't know what that's going to be, but I like your little bunnies, I'll tell you that.
Thank Pretty you cute. So much.
Pretty cute stuff. Yep. So when you do your own stitching, now you don't just stitch your stuff. You stitch other people's?
No. I love stitching all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And so I have everything from a chatelaine to a monochrome long dog sampler pattern going right now. Yeah, I'm not one of those people with 52 whips or more, but I like to have a good variety of projects going. And I brought a good truckload home from Nashville.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So do you have, other than your desk for designing, do you have a space in the house or?
Yes, I have what is called my throne, and it's just a white leather chair in the living room where everybody sits. And I have an envelope, like a big fabric pouch that sits behind my throne, and that has all my projects in it. So I just grab what I want to work on and get to town.
Don't go over there. That's mom's throne.
That's mom's throne. Get out.
Don't touch that.
Yep.
Do you get much time to stitch?
Not as much as I would like. That would be the short answer. I'm sure everybody thinks that, but
a few of us do. Yeah.
You know, a few hours a week, and yeah, that's satisfying to me. I have a lot of other things going on, so to have a few hours a week to relax and stitch is good for me.
Yeah. You stitch your own models?
I do sometimes. It just depends on how good I feel about how it's going to go. Sometimes I finish a design and I know like this is finished. I know this is going to look great. And so I'll hire a model stitcher to do it for me, because I know what I get back is going to be awesome. That isn't a 100% guarantee. Sometimes I do get something back and need to tweak it, but, and then other times I'm just not sure. And so I feel like I need to dive into it myself and maybe tweak it as I go along. So yeah, I'd love to be able to use Model Stitchers 100%, but it just depends.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to adjust here and there. I better stitch one myself, yeah.
You can't always tell. You know, sometimes you think something is a good idea, and once you actually put it into the fabric, you think, oh, that's actually terrible. That needs ripped out as soon as possible, yeah.
Good idea for another day.
Yes, yes.
What is your plan now for the next year? You said you have some kind of a schedule. Are you trying to put out a new release every couple months, or how are you ramping up the?
Well, I showed shop owners my next release, which was done that I brought to the show, and so I'm hoping to put that out in May. It's going to be along the lines of Birds to the Boughs, which was my release last June that did really, really well. So I'm gonna put that one out in May. I've noticed there's kind of a schedule with the cross-stitch releases, and I'm kind of debating on whether I want to go along with what I see other people doing or just fly my own kite. I'm not sure. I've noticed a lot of people, you know, it's like the seasonal thing, right? Patriotic designs come out in May. Fall designs come out in late August, September. Christmas designs come out late October, early November. So I'm not sure. I have a loose plan, but we'll see how it goes. I'm not sure. And also, you know, not everything is seasonal. So trying to decide how you put those out there.
Yeah,
too.
Once you start a seasonal thing, you kind of have to keep going with that, I think. Yeah.
And if something is seasonal, obviously it needs released during those times when people are interested in stitching those seasons. Duh. Yeah.
I've not figured out, because
the seasonal stitching.
Well, yeah, because if I'm going to do a 4th of July one that I would like to show around the 4th of July, you know, it seems like I need to start at the Christmas before.
Right. But no one's interested in the 4th of July at Christmas.
I know. That's the thing.
Right.
Yeah. And like May 1, I should be working on Christmas things.
People did start up kind of a Christmas in July thing with their stitching. So that was fun. I know what you're saying. Like, it doesn't make it doesn't make sense unless they're extremely small designs that people can finish really quickly. We just like to go with the seasons and buy with the seasons, I suppose.
Well, I mean, that's the way we're all wired.
Right.
Is that very thing. You start seeing firecrackers on TV and you think, oh, some red, white, and blue thing would be fun to stitch.
Right.
And then you'll finish it the following Christmas. And
and you'll post it on Instagram. It'll get 5 likes because it's 4th of July and Christmas.
And nobody cares right now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. There's no figuring it out, but, yeah, it just seems like the whole thing should be reversed. Valentine's Day should be done around Thanksgiving and round and round we go. So I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know.
You know, as you know, cross stitchers don't care about when they finish things, Gary.
I've noticed.
Yeah. None of us are planning on when we finish things. Except for those weird deadlines where you have a wedding or something.
Yeah, I've done that. Never again. Mm-mm. No.
Yeah.
That sucks.
You never come up with the idea early enough. That's the problem.
Sucks the fun right out of it for me.
Yeah.
You got to hit a deadline. It's a gift. No. And I don't do the gift thing either. No more.
Gary does not give gifts anymore.
No, because it just isn't. No. I don't know. It's, you know, not like I need to be all, you know, hugged and kissed and fawned over because I did a thing, but I don't. You know, I just don't think that. No. People who don't stitch have no idea what goes into those things.
Yeah.
And so therefore I do them for me and keep them for me and let Marga hang them on the wall if that's what she wants. I don't know.
I've heard that from a lot of floss tubers. Just, you know, getting burned with the gifts, and it hurts your feelings. It's hard.
Yeah. And I appreciate it. It's hard to understand if you receive a needlework gift. It's hard to understand what goes into that unless you've done it.
Right.
It's really hard to understand.
Yeah.
And you know, all the prep work, deciding on colors, stitching, tearing it out, redoing it, all those things, and getting it just right. And then, of course, to have it finished, unless you can finish yourself, the expense of having that done or having it framed.
Right.
You know, it really is, it's very expensive at some point, if you especially have it custom framed. And then it's like, oh, yeah, nice. Somebody else gave me a blender, you know?
Yeah, right. So I'll use that every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I just, yeah, over that. But it's those deadline projects.
Yeah.
Oh, those to me, never, ever again. No.
Yeah, they're not fun.
No. Because it's just that weight that's on your back all the time. And I really would like to take a break from this and go stitch something else. But, oh, I only got 60 days to get it done. I guess I better keep pounding away. And see, that's not fun. That's no fun at all. No.
Makes it into a job.
Yeah. Yeah. When you do your designs, do you see a finish? Or do you see a design? Do you see, you know, this is going to be a pillow. This would look great framed. Do you see something?
Sometimes, not always. I mean, if it's small, I'm pretty much assuming it's going to be finished as a pillow or a pincushion or something small like that. Yeah, and if it's bigger, I'm probably going to frame it. So I guess I kind of do know how it's going to be finished.
Okay. You really do a gamut of colors. Do you prefer lots of bright colors or more one and two color things? What really appeals to you? Or sounds like you'll do anything, whatever comes to your head.
Yeah, whatever comes to my head, basically. No, I like colors that like just pop off the fabric, you know, and really sing together. And my favorite overdyed floss maker, which I know you're going to ask me next, right?
No.
No.
Go ahead.
I love Gentle Arts threads. I just, yeah, I'm a Gentle Arts girl. I love their threads. Yeah.
Well,
do you have a favorite?
Do I? No. No.
No.
Don't care. Just don't care.
Don't care.
No.
As long as it works.
No, and yeah. I think that's interesting too, is how people will gravitate toward one or the other.
Yeah.
But I'm not designing. So, you know, if Gentle Arts gives you a palette that you gravitate to, then I can see how that happens.
Well, I like how it feels too.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fluffy, and yeah, I just, the texture, how they pre-cut it. I like all of it. Yeah.
Now that I do not care for.
Yeah. You don't like the pre-cut?
No.
Huh?
No. Like to do that myself. Thank you very much.
You don't like the length they cut it?
It's okay. I just prefer to do it myself.
You want to cut it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like to, yeah. I'm just weird like that. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I often wonder on all these overdyes, if all that base white thread is coming from the same factory.
I wouldn't know the answer to that, but I think just based on how they stitch up, I can definitely tell that some don't, that it's different. I'm not sure. You're going to have to go behind the scenes and figure this out.
I got to know someday.
Yeah.
No. And I'm with you that the different threads seem to have a different feel.
Yeah.
And it may be the dyeing process. I don't know, but
that's true. But even with the fabrics, you can tell who's using Zweigart and who's not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, with the threads that need some investigative work.
Yeah. Cause you know how that happens. Everything's made in one factory and you go, oh no, that can't be, that cannot be. It never mattered. Yeah. But that was the one thing that really stuck out. The Picture This Plus, when I went to their room to see, of course, you know, all the colors for all the linen. But what they're doing with their Aida cloth, that I don't know if you noticed that. It's so soft.
Mm.
It isn't that stiff Aida. I mean, it's like a linen where you can, boy, I'll tell you, I was tempted, you know, give me one of those. I want to see what that's like. I mean, I haven't stitched on Aida in a long time, and it's the stiffness of it that I just don't care for. But yeah, they really, I don't know what they do, but they really soften it up, and that's tempting.
I love Picture This Plus fabric. They've been great to work with.
Yeah, I don't know what they do, but they certainly have an array of really interesting colors, and the way they dye them, it really adds a nice background. All right, Stephanie, that flew all by.
Right. It was fun.
Happens every time. Okay, so we'll have a new design next week. And 8 designs for Nashville. I'm writing that down. That's how it's going to work.
Are you going to help me with this, Gary?
That's how it's going to work right there. Yep.
Gary's going to model stitch all of them for me.
Oh, yeah. 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 Don't count on him for any show. All right, Stephanie, thanks for joining us. It was fun.
Oh, it was great. Thanks for interviewing me, Gary.
And thanks to everybody for listening. And let's see. I believe it is going to be Arlene. Yes, Arlene will be here Wednesday. So that'll be fun in its own right. Yes. Thanks for listening.